Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, depending where are you in this universe today. On Cool Your Heels, you are listening to Passional World Radio Network, a wholly owned subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Our motto is Educate, Enlighten, and Entertain. And today, our special guest is Tony Wilson, who wrote a book called Take the Trade, A Floor Trader's Guide to Making Money Every Day in Any Market, Consistent Profits, and 30 Days.
Absolutely.
It's a groundbreaking book. So welcome to the show, Tony. How are you doing today?
I am great, Lillian. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, despite the fact it's 86 degrees outside and I'm on the third floor and it's a little bit warm in some spots, but I'm all right. I'm sure what our listeners would like to know is how you got started in the Wall Street business in the first place. So please give a few facts about yourself.
Well, you know, originally I was working for my dad's insurance agency as an insurance agent back in the late 80s. And the insurance companies at that time were starting to offer mutual funds. I'm sure you probably remember back then. And they came to us and said,
yes.
If you'd like to offer mutual funds through your agency, all you need to do is take a Series 6 test and we'll sponsor you. And, you know, you'll be off and running. So I looked into it and I found out that if I got a Series 7, not only could I sell mutual funds, but I could sell stocks and bonds and all the other financial products. So I spoke with my my fiance there, well, soon to be fiance. We were just dating at the time. And I told her what my plan was. And she said, you should go for it. So that's what I did. And I got a brokerage firm, a small brokerage firm to sponsor me. And I studied for the test. And Lillian, that test is... it is a really tough one. I mean, all the tests I took in college could not compare to that Series 7 test. I think they make it so difficult because they don't want any more stockbrokers. They don't want any more competition. So, but anyway, I passed the test. I was really excited. And the very second day that I worked for the firm, they had a trip down to the stock exchange. So a field trip. So I said, okay, I'll go down and check it out. So I went down with the group. And, you know, it was really cool. You know, they had the trading floor and all the tickets were all over the floor and people were going back and forth. And, you know, it was really, really exciting. And I was talking to the one young lady who was giving us the tour. And I was asking her a few questions, you know, and she said, well, if you're that inquisitive, why don't you just fill out this application here? Maybe you'll get a job or something. You know, she says, so. Just for, you know, giggles, I said, okay. So I just filled out the application and, you know, I said, here, you know, if they ever get something down here, you know, yeah, I'd be interested, you know. So Lillian, they called me the next day. And so they had a job as a runner. And as a runner, all you really do, I mean, it's not real, you know, technical. You know, the brokers, they'll write up a ticket. Back in the days when, you know, you actually used a pencil, you know, if you remember pencils.
Right.
And they'd call for a runner. You'd grab the ticket from the broker and you take it to the teletype girl and she'd type it into the system and it'd go around on the big board. And that was it. You know, that was basically my job. So I interviewed with the guy, Larry, and he really liked me. And he said, okay, you start tomorrow. We start at 5:30 in the morning. If you get here at 5:31, don't bother coming because, you know, you're fired. So that night, I wound up getting up, I don't know, at 3:30 in the morning. I got down there, you know, right when the security guard was opening the door. I laid down on the couch there in the lobby. You know, I was really excited. I did not want to miss out. So anyway, wound up doing that. Didn't pay a lot. They started me off at a whole $900 a month, which my girlfriend, fiance at that time was not excited about that. But I told her I thought it was going to be a good opportunity. So anyway, did that for a little while. And, you know, I was learning all the intricate the intricacies about the market at the time. And you know what I come to find out, Lillian? That those guys down there were no smarter than me. I thought all these guys were going to be these Wall Street wizards and had all this knowledge of all, you know, the market functions, and they weren't. A lot of them shouldn't have been down there. It's just that their uncle or their grandfather was one of the traders down there, and they were there, but they shouldn't have been on the floor. But anyway, I wound up getting picked up by one of the brokerage firms, and I worked at a couple of the posts for the specialists. The specialists are the guys who run that particular area for their firm, and they trade those particular stocks. And they started me off as a clerk, and you know, I kind of learned some things, just kind of keeping positions and learning some things. And from there, I got a couple of other jobs at different firms there on the floor, and I was down there for a few years, and it was really cool. I learned a lot, and opportunity came up a few years later to go work for Charles Schwab in Phoenix, Arizona, over off 24th and Camelback, and they had an opening. They had an opening on the bond desk, which back in the day, if you were in the bond desk, I mean, that was big time, Lillian. That was big time. You know, equities, stocks. If you were in stocks, it was like, you know, you missed out. What's wrong with you? You must be defective. You're in equities. What happened? You know, but
right.
Because all the big money is in bonds, right? Those are the guys that are, you know, they're right. Placing, you know, $100 million in an account and living off 3% interest, right? So anyway, it went down there. They didn't have any room on the bond desk, of course, but they put me in a department called Schwab 500. Schwab 500 was their most active traders division, which kind of fit in with what I had done down on the trading floor. They thought it was a perfect fit for me. So they wound up putting me there. And it was a good deal, Lillian, because I was able to say I had gotten married by then, and me and my new wife, you know, I was getting paid much better by the time I left the exchange. So I was making
right. California. Yeah, I bet she was happy about that. Yeah.
Yes, she was. So I was making.
I bet. Didn't use something from Cracker Jacks to marry her with. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it was really good. And I spent a few years down there with Schwab, and eventually, you know, I left, went on to work for an institution for a little while, and then decided to go out on my own and do it professionally. So on my own. So. It's been interesting. It's been an up and down ride, you know, of course, but it's been really cool. Been able to, you know, pay off a couple of mortgages, numerous cars, you know, send my daughter to USC. You know, it's been good. It's been a great lifestyle. I mean, it's really been outstanding. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything in the world. It's been amazing. It's been a really amazing ride.
That's great. So what made you or what led you to write a book?
So it was really a dare by my brother, who is always daring me because he knows that I'm never going to say no. I was a football coach. I coached youth football because I had time because, you know, I was kind of working on my own. So I took my youth football team from 0-10 when I first got them to 10-0. Now, it took a few years to get there, but we eventually got there. So I never backed down to a challenge. So my brother said, well, you know, you're getting kind of old. You got a lot of gray hairs. So, you know, you might want to write something down before you forget it all. All right, I'll give it a shot. You know, I've never written a book before. So I started about a year ago, and It was quite a challenge. I thought, to be honest with you, Lillian, I thought I was going to be done in about a month, month and a half tops, because that's just me. I go into something and I just kind of plow through it and I get it done. Oh boy, no, that's not how it works.
That's not how you set up and write a book. Sorry.
I see why Stephen King goes away to the mountains and throws away his cell phone, you know, to write a book, because the distractions will kill you. I mean, it just, you know, And if you've never done it before, I mean, there's a certain format that you have to follow to write a book as well. So I had to research a lot of stuff. I was able to get an editor, young lady who has a literary degree out of University of Michigan, and she edited my book. But when I sent her over my first draft, Lillian, she said, "You write like a 10-year-old."
Well, yeah, but I'll help you out.
Yeah, it could have been. But she said, "I'll help you out. I'll clean it up for you and make it make sense." So she did, and I'm grateful to her. She did a fabulous job on writing the book.
So what kind of advice, what kind of tips, what do you tell your readers that they did not know to help them get set up? So should they wish to dabble, which is a great word right there.
Yeah, it's a great
and
word.
Quadruple their pennies into $20 bills, for example.
So
how is your book set up so you can help people like that?
So the book is set up so that it works primarily on building fundamentals and taking complexity and turning it into simplicity. And the biggest the thing that I think works the best for my readers and my students has been that they've been able to take what was very complicated, or at least it was deemed to be complicated, or it was meant by the professionals on Wall Street. Hey, don't you do that. Just give the money to us. We'll take care of it. We're the pros.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to just make it simple. I just wanted to make it, you know, where just the average man or woman off the street could just read this, feel very comfortable, learn the terms, the terminology, and just break it down and just make it very, very simple. You know, I always say all the time, it's up, down, and sideways. That's it. That's all the market can do. It can go up, it can go down, or it can go sideways. And just make it really simple.
Or it can bleed a bit. Yeah.
So,
well, the thing is that a lot of financial experts divide up the classes. If you don't have $1 million, stay away. If you don't have $500,000, I'm not interested. If you don't have $1,000, you're really a pauper. So, and I got the impression your book didn't quite approach it that way.
No. I wanted to make it available to, you know, to everyone. I wanted to, you know, if you were new to the market, or if you were even a seasoned veteran, there were going to be some things that you were going to get from going through the book. So I want to, you know, and of course, there's only so much you can put into it. I didn't want to make it a war and peace novel, you know, but there were some things that I thought were very important that you needed to know in terms to, you know, really getting started and being able to implement, you know, some of those fundamentals and rules immediately so that you could see results. So I just wanted to just bring about a much easier and relaxed way to go about understanding investing and trading. So, and I got a lot of compliments. That's the word I was looking for. I got the biggest compliment was, "My God, Tony, you made it simple to understand." Well, then I did my job.
You did your job. So if somebody went to pick up your book, they could start off and say, "This is what I need to know." And yes, then I could start building on it to move forward.
Yes, of course. You know, you're not going to learn.
And that's what a person should do in any kind of nonfiction book. Yes.
Exactly. You're not going to learn it all, of course, but you'll have enough, okay, so that you'll have a foundation established that you can build upon. It's, you know, I tell people all the time, for some reason, they come into, you know, this space a little and they just think that, you know, they're going to read the book or take a course, and the very next day they're going to be a professional trader. And it just doesn't work that way. I mean, you just don't go down and you don't read Michael Jordan's basketball book or go buy a basketball, and the next day you're going to be playing in the NBA. You know, it just That's not how it works. That's not reality, you know, but there's enough in there. There's enough in there, you know, that you can grasp and you can kind of take and go into the market slowly, which I always ask that you not trade cash immediately, at least for the first 3 to 6 months. I would like for you to practice trade or paper trade, as they call it. A lot of brokerage firms offer the opportunity to trade just using imaginary cash, and you can develop your skills and go through the concepts and methods and get your confidence together, you know, before you actually start to use, you know, live dollars. So I think it's a great way to go. It really is. It's a smart way to go.
I think so. I think you should turn it into a curriculum and introduce some of the high school and college kids to learn how to start dealing in the stock market, because it'll give them an appreciation of how money is invested, because that's what's running the economy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hate to see, my daughter, my kids, they're so fortunate. They don't have student loans, but I know a lot of their friends, they have student loans, you know, and they're already, I tell them, you guys are already, you know, a little bit behind the eight ball because you're saddled with this debt. And you guys need to understand, you know, when you're saddled with debt and it has an interest rate associated to it, that accelerates the debt. So, and they don't teach them any of those concepts in college.
And they don't teach them that you're spending 4 or 5 years just paying off the interest. I mean, when I finally paid off my student loan, it took me a quarter of a century, you know, 25 years, folks. And it took me the first 6 years just paying off the interest that accrued until I got a job. Yeah. And if it's up to even back then, 15, 16, 17%, and you're just about breaking even, because in the old days when you got out of college, you didn't walk into a $75,000 a year job. They didn't exist.
No.
I know that happens now, but back in my day when the dinosaurs crossed the plains, you didn't make that much money when you first got out of the gate.
Exactly. Exactly. So they do have a little bit of an advantage.
And it took a while for you just pay back that interest.
Yeah. And because, you know, just in the last few years, Lillian, with inflation being what it is, it's really difficult. I mean, my kids, they still live at home with me, which, I mean, I would too. I mean, I pay all the bills. So, I mean, you know, but it's really tough. So
my parents didn't make that easy for me. I had to pay room and board.
Yeah.
When I lived with them.
You know what, Lillian? I remember a conversation we had, and this month is the first month that they are paying rent. So I took your advice.
Give them an appreciation of where that money's going through. I mean, my dad gave me a formula that you were supposed to apply in the good old days. Of course, they don't exist. Where so much want to rent, so much want to transportation, which meant trains or buses, folks. I didn't own a car when I got out of school. They were expensive back then. And then also paying off your school loan, insurance for the car, if you had one, your medical insurance, which was still pretty high. You didn't have to worry about cell phones. They didn't exist. But there were other things that you needed to pay. So it all added up, and it came out of that, not the gross, but what was left after the taxes, Social Security, and whatever else your company took out.
Yeah, because you can't forget your partner, FICA. That guy, he is.
That's right. You can't forget FICA.
That guy is amazing. He does none of the work, but he takes a big chunk of the money.
It takes, and you're talking state and city tax for a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you really have to budget your money.
The kids, they have no clue of what lies ahead of them when they come out of school. you know, it's really, really difficult. You know, the rents are extremely expensive. I'm here in Southern California. The rents are extremely expensive here, as they are pretty much all across the country. You know,
yes.
And like you said, when you factor in all those expenses you just mentioned, it's really hard coming out the gate. You know, my daughter said, you know what? I think I'm going to go out and look at apartments. I've saved up $2,000. I said,
you have to pay down a deposit first in month's rent. I remember what the deposits were back in the 70s, folks, and they came to about $1,500.
Back then,
and if you had a kid who liked to crayon your walls or the molding, had to return the apartment back into which the condition was when you first entered it.
That's right. And they don't understand, you know what? You've got to buy plates and forks and spoons and paper towels and toothpaste and toilet paper. You got to buy all that stuff. You got to go out.
The second time around after my divorce, I practically took out a loan from my parents for something like $3,000 or $4,000 just to put in the basics.
Right. Pots, pans.
For a one-bedroom apartment, bedroom one to child, I slept in the living room. That was the way it went.
Yeah. So, but that's a great idea. I think educating kids and developing a curriculum, especially when it comes to investing, because you know what? I was trying to explain to my son the other day. I was talking to him about, you know, capital, and we were talking a little bit about crypto. He's excited about crypto, which I get it. I understand it's a new technology. It's a digital technology. And I think we are probably headed down that road. I mean, I don't know about you. I can't even remember the last time I had cash money in my wallet. It seems like I use a card for everything. But anyway, and just trying to explain to him, you know, how money works, because he didn't really understand. Like we were talking about earlier, if you've got debt associated with interest, that interest accelerates the debt, which puts you further behind the eight ball. So you want to be the one who is the lender. You don't want to be the borrower. So, and I was trying to explain to him, you don't want to have your money in banks. You want your money working. I have very little money in the bank. A guy told me, Lillian, when I was working at Charles Schwab, he said something it stuck with me forever. He said, you know what, Tony? Poor people keep their money in banks. And I didn't understand that. I said, what do you mean? I asked, what do you mean? What do you mean poor people keep their money in banks? I thought, you know, everyone kept them. He says, no. He says, wealthy people have their money invested. Their money is working. They buy their time back with their money. Their money, their capital creates more capital. Whereas the working class and the poor, they have to go out and work to get their capital. So they have to trade time to get the capital. Whereas wealthy people put their capital to work to create more capital so they can have their time to themselves. Oh. Okay, well, I want to be in that camp.
The only bank I use is for my monthly bills, but that's about it. Everything else is being reinvested and it's working for me and everything else. And yeah, how else does one do it? My husband was trained by his dad when he was around 8-9 years old, and he was already in the stock market by the time he was 10.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yes. So he was already on his way by the time he was out of college. He was way ahead of the curve. Absolutely. But that's what you need to do. And it's a whole different mindset than what you're taught. And they don't really teach it. And what people don't seem to understand, even if you go in a cashless society, folks, you're still going to have to keep records of what you spend and how much you have left and what is owed to you. Because if it's in credits or pieces of paper or however it is done, they will keep records. And once you use up whatever your value is on that open market, you won't be able to live beyond that.
True.
So cashless society sounds really great, but it's not set up for the working person. Again, it's for the wealthy.
Exactly. Well, everything was set up for the capitalists, right? I mean, we think about...
Yes, you know, for the capitalists.
Yeah, we're thinking, you know, we were talking a second ago about, you know, teaching it in school. Well, there's a reason why they don't teach it in school. They want you to become workers. America needs workers.
Yes.
They don't need bosses. They need workers. So they want you
there's
to be
enough,
able to...
chiefs.
They need Indians.
They need the Indians. Yeah, they need the worker bees.
They want
absolutely
workers. Yeah, they want workers. But you know what? I think what happened, you know, Lillian, during COVID, a lot of people started to figure that out. They started to go, wait a minute. I'm at home. I'm working. I'm just as productive, but I don't have to drive in. And I did notice, too, that Lillian, during that time period, every single month there was a spike of about 8,000. I think it was 8,000 to 10,000 new investment trading accounts were being opened up at all the different brokerage firms all across the country. People were figuring out, you know what? I need to take a little bit of this stimulus check and park it in the stock market and try my hand at this thing. So I think they're figuring it out. I think they know, or at least they have a thought in the back of their head that I better do something else. You know, I better make sure that I have something else available to me, because now, as you're quite aware, we've got this thing that's just been the talk of the town called artificial intelligence, AI. And I got a chance to be in on a conference call about 2 weeks ago with a big firm, which I will not use their name because it was one of my buddies who still works for that big firm. I got a chance to listen in, and they were saying that they believe within the next 2 years, 400 million jobs will be eliminated by AI. Therefore, and these are not going to be jobs like, you know, the guy who was a carpenter or a plumber, you know, the guy who's out there working using his hands. It's going to be the guy who sits in front, or the gal sitting in front of a computer, you know, pecking out, you know, whatever they peck out for their job description. And they're going to be eliminated, because as an employer, the one thing, well, there's a couple of things that you want to do. You want to cut cost and you want to increase productivity. And the difference between cost being cut and productivity being raised, that's my margin that I get to put in my back pocket and keep. And if I don't do it, then my competition's going to do it. So everybody's going to race toward, you know, getting this thing done and being first to be able to, you know, eliminate costs so that they can compete. So I've got a brother-in-law who literally, he's a rocket scientist. He works for NASA, but he does the communications for them. He's an engineer. And he told me, he said, Tony, in 2 to 3 years, my job will be eliminated. There'll be a computer that will do all the coding, all the things that I do. They'll be able to press a button and it will pretty much do everything that I do. And it'll do it in a matter of minutes. Things that take me 2-3 days to be completed, it will be done in minutes. And they will eliminate, he probably makes $225, $250 a year. He's well paid. So those are the jobs that, as an employer, I'm definitely looking to get rid of him. That's a lot of payroll I can get rid of with, you know, a computer now. So, you know, he said, hey,
yes,
I'm going to be fine.
If they don't want large gang people roaming around, they better train them.
Yeah.
Or something else.
Yeah. He said he was going to buy my book, Lillian. I said, yeah, you might want.
Oh, well, that's a good start. That should make you a bestseller. Tell we'll us see. 400 million people are going to be out of work to buy your book.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll have enough money to pay the $24.95.
Oh, they should, don't you think? I mean, for $24.95, you can buy yourself and a family a cheap meal at McDonald's.
I don't think so. I think my good buddy, he lives in Scottsdale, Arizona. He said him and his wife went to McDonald's just a few nights ago. They spent $37 between the two of them.
Gee, and that used to be advertised as a cheap meal for a family of four. Get it for under $10. Not anymore.
They spent $31 around for two of them. Anyway. Well,
before we wrap this up, Tony, I know you want to do a shout out to the people in Hawaii.
Yes, to my friends in Hawaii in Lahaina town. And also I have a lot of friends in Oahu, too. So I don't want to them to think that I forgot about them. But yeah, my heart really goes out to you guys. You know, anything that we can do. I got my Hawaii shirt on. You know, my son, he played football for the University of Hawaii. And, you know, I've got a big affiliation. I really love the people of Hawaii. I really have a strong feel for those people over there. And I really am just heartbroken for what's happened to them over there. So anything I can do, hopefully I can get over there soon and try to help out. But I know the government's doing whatever they need to do, and they don't need a lot of people in the way. I know. As a matter of fact, they were saying, Lillian, if you were coming over for a vacation, don't come right now, because they just need to work on the rebuilding efforts and finding those that still haven't been found yet. So that's that's really big. So but also too, Lillian, I just wanted to let your listeners know that as a gift, because I'm feeling charitable today. If they want to go to my website, www.prostocktrading.net, they can get the PDF version of my book for free. Take the Trade. Okay.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon, for listening to Tony Wilson, known as Wall Street Wilson, the book Take the Trade, A Floor Trader's Guide to Making Money Every Day in Any Market, Consistent Profits in 30 Days. And if you want to listen to this all over again, go over to youtube.com/PWR Network, underline PW Talk Radio, twitter.com/PWTR, website PassionateWorldTalkRadio.com. We're there. Go read the blog. It will give you a shortened version of the link from Bitly, and you should be able to pick up everything you need, and then go over to Amazon.com and go and buy the book. And I'm pretty sure that Wall Street here would be more than happy to send you his John Hancock. Of course, it'll be Tony Wilson, not John Hancock, in case you're very literal minded. We have to get these things always straightened out. We want to thank you all very much for joining us. And remember, please keep listening. Thank you.
All right.